Hello and welcome to the latest podcast. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, of course, the man that won the WCW World Heavyweight title, the man that was the head writer for the WWF. He is Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, welcome back. How are you doing?
Nice to be here again with you. Always like doing these interviews with you, man.
So let's talk about the topic at hand today. In Your House, Bad Blood, 1997. It was on October 5th, 1997, St. Louis, Missouri at the Kiel Center. The attendance, 21,151. Pay-per-view buys, 240K. So great attendance. St. Louis always has good crowds. Yeah,
great wrestling town, man.
The pay-per-view buys, 240 is not bad either. Kind of going the upward trend. Vince McMahon, this will pretty much be the last pay-per-view that he's going to be the lead announcer on. He's going to stop calling it because, obviously, next month he's going to be Mr. McMahon, and that's going to take his character and the WWF into the stratosphere. What's your role at this point?
I'm heavily involved by this point.
They do Raw from MSG. Cactus Jack versus Triple H. Awesome match. They have a great match. And it's a wild, crazy brawl. So it's almost like teasing, like, wait, this prissy boy is actually like kind of tough. He can handle Cactus Jack and Dude Love and Mankind. Austin stuns McMahon. And then, like, everyone always says, like, that's the attitude era. Him stunning Vince. Like, everyone always says that.
I remember that, bro, because it was a big deal.
I think it might have been even a bigger deal.
Bad Blood is best remembered for the debut of Kane.
The brainchild of the character Kane, that was Bruce. There was already the idea of this Kane. And then when I got involved creatively, Bruce laid out this Kane character for me. Then I started writing that story for Undertaker and Kane. So this is really where the story starts. And yeah, bro, I was really writing that week-to-week Undertaker Kane story, but Kane was not my brainchild.
Kane's actually the name of his son, too, Bruce. Yes. So he loves the name Kane. He loves that. Yes. And there's that picture from Creative Services, or many pictures, when they do the Kane documentary, the A&E stuff, and even on the network, they had a couple things on Kane. The cool pictures from Creative Services, some without the mask, some with the mask, some with a cape, some without, but the general idea that he's like, red and black. He's Undertaker's brother, so he's monstrous, but he has long hair, kind of looks like Taker, but with a mask on. I mean, really cool stuff from Creative Services.
They
almost
were great,
like comic
bro.
Book character-esque.
Bro, I swear to God, this is the T.L. Hopper, Freddie Joe Floyd, Mantar period, right? The publications department was right next to Creative Services. The woman's office right next to mine was the woman who rendered those drawings.
Is that a lot on the person doing the drawing, or is that the person that's relaying the info, like Vince?
No, that's
Bruce.
Relaying the info? That's Bruce giving her the direction for this new character.
Kane, though, on the other hand, is an
Yeah, great. Absolutely, man. No doubt. That's why I always make sure to give Bruce credit, man. No doubt.
Great idea, obviously, Undertaker's brother. Does he legitimately exist? I mean, that was a really, really good idea. It's just because it made Undertaker, after a while, he kind of got lame. Then Mankind came in, okay, built him back up again, but then he kind of got lame again. It's like, all right, what can we do with this guy? Kane basically like reignited his career for years. It's like, wow, this is actually interesting again.
I mean, yeah, and bro, there really was no story. The only thing there really was he's got this brother Kane, and like there was a fire that disfigured him, but that's all that was really given to me. So I just kind of had to connect the dots and just come up with a story that made sense. There was a fire that Taker accidentally set, and you know, he thought his brother was killed in it, but he wasn't, and he was badly burned. I mean, he laid out this beautiful story. So the concept of Kane came from Bruce Prichard. No doubt about it. Hands down.
Great idea, great character, great backstory. Now, Bruce could probably answer this question better than I. I don't believe that the character was created for Glenn Jacobs. I believe that Bruce had this character in his mind. Bruce was very close with Taker. Him and Taker were best friends. So Taker's story was always Bruce's priority when Bruce was involved in the creative. But the fact of the matter is, he knew the story. He knew it inside and out, and it played out to fruition. As far as the character himself, Glenn Jacobs, let me say this. Glenn Jacobs is probably the nicest guy I've ever had the privilege of working with in the wrestling business. And I know I say that a lot. Listen, there are a lot of nice guys. There are a lot of a-holes, but there are a lot of nice guys. You know, Kurt Angle, you know, I can't say enough. You know, Mick Foley, the list goes on and on and on. Glenn Jacobs was one of those guys, the nicest guy you would ever want to meet. So when we put him in this role and it started taking off, I was really happy for Glenn because, in my opinion, he deserved nothing but the best.
So got to start out on a somber note because as this pay-per-view is about to air, Brian Pillman passes away earlier that day, pay-per-view.
I didn't even connect those dots. What I remember vividly about that day, we're getting ready for the pay-per-view and the news comes in and the news starts going around the locker room. And I'll never forget, bro, the Hart Foundation. I think they had something that day. They were all dressing together. They were all in the same area. And I swear to God, I remember Owen coming up to me and telling me, Vince, like, was it true? Like, is Brian, you know, really dead? Is it true? Like, he was in such denial. That's why, man, I always defend Vince about the decision to continue the show. Because when stuff like that happens, you're not thinking in your right mind. It's so surreal. Like, these guys are waiting for Pillman to walk in the locker room, get dressed, they got a match. And then you get this news, and there's this period of time where, like, the reality hasn't settled in yet. Bro, nobody in that spot would have been in the right frame of mind. You just weren't, bro. And that's why I always remember that about Owen, because it was like they found out about it, but it still wasn't sinking in. You know, it was still very, very, very surreal. So yeah, bro, I remember that moment really, really vivid.
Man, it's just crazy. Like, you go to the show and, you know, Pillman, you don't even think, like, one of the wrestlers is dead when they find him in the hotel. I mean, just absolutely crazy. I mean, just terrible, terrible news. The show must go on, right? I mean, that's like the Vince attitude, right?
Yeah. I don't know how these guys did it, bro. I don't know how they went out and performed, but that's where professionalism really, really comes in, because I don't think I could have done it.
Man, just a crazy start to the show, because it's almost like insane what happens here, because it seemed like he was finally getting his footing because he was injured, though. But it seemed like maybe this was going to kind of get him rolling because he was so hot.
And that's what I'm saying, John. It was right around this time when I witnessed firsthand the real pain he was in. So to this day, John, I don't know what the cause of death was. I don't know if it was an overdose.
What a shame, because he was somewhat like on fire, like when you guys brought him in, like WCW fired him. Everyone thought it was real. Then it was real. Yeah. ECW had him. Then he was going to piss in the ring. The loose cannon was on fire.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
According to Terry Runnels on her podcast, Goldust and him were feuding. He gets Terry Runnels because he won that match. And basically she becomes part of, you know, basically Pillman. Like, she becomes a part of his entourage, if you will. She was saying that the original plan was for Goldust and her, after 30 days with Pillman, they get back together, they renew their vows. When they're renewing their vows, anybody object, Pillman comes out and beats the crap out of Goldust and leave him bleeding. And then she said, well, me and Dakota are leaving you anyway for Pillman. I love him.
If she remembers it, somebody had to tell her that.
If it hadn't been for that car crash, maybe him versus Austin, maybe that's like the big feud.
That could have been great, man. Yep.
And he was actually scheduled to face Dude Love. they're saying it was a heart attack from heart disease is how he died. But
yeah,
man, just crazy, just terrible, terrible for Flying Brian Pillman, loose cannon. Yeah. So let's start the pay-per-view. The first match, the Nation of Domination, D'Lo Brown, Kama Mustafa, and The Rock, Rocky Maivia, defeated the Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal in a handicap match in 12 minutes, 20 seconds.
It's random, bro, because they don't know what to do with these guys. That's why Rocky was put in the Nation to begin with. I remember that. I remember Bruce Pritchard calling me in his office, and the reason they were putting Rocky in the Nation of Domination was they didn't know what to do with him. So they're thinking, oh, bro, put him in the Nation. Farooq will be with him on the road and teach him the ropes and this and that.
So Ken Shamrock, another thing, he's injured. He was originally supposed to team with Hawk and Animal. Do you remember anything about Shamrock's injury? It didn't seem too severe because he wrestled a few weeks later.
I really don't. I mean, stuff that specific, man, I'm not really going to remember.
Shamrock not there. It makes sense, right? Nation of Domination 3-on-2. They're going to go over Hawk and Animal.
Absolutely.
But the funny part is, like, Farooq will help the Nation win, but they keep teasing like The Rock didn't want his help.
That definitely is a slow, simmering storyline in the background. It's those subtleties that I really, really feel I'm missing today.
So basically, you're teasing The Rock because you guys see something in him. He's maturing. You're starting to build him up.
There's no need of urgency to rush it, you know, just kind of let it organically happen, man.
So like I said, because Brian Pillman's death, his match with Dude Love is scrapped, so we get a minis match. Max Mini and Nova defeat Mosaic and Tarantula in the minis tag team match in about 7 minutes. I don't know. Like, what's the deal with the minis here at this point? I mean, we're about to hit the Attitude Era. We're kind of in the midst of it a little bit, and we're having a minis match.
I'm working on stories and segments of the show, but yeah, I ain't writing no minis in. I don't know if AAA paid the WWE X amount of dollars to put them on the show, to give them exposure. I mean, I don't know. But it was definitely all about the contractual deal with AAA. And that's why if I'm involved at that point, to the extent that I was, that's where I would have said, you know, guys, listen, I understand business and I understand you're making money off of this, but it's still kind of bastardizing the show a little bit. I would have said that, but I was not in a position to say that yet.
It just doesn't seem to fit. So then the Godwins, Henry O. Godwin and Phineas with Uncle Cletus, who was, I guess, the dirty white boy. I don't know what Uncle Cletus, that gimmick. I mean, remember T.L. Hopper and then Uncle Cletus? Just, I don't know, just weird. It didn't kind of fit there. But they defeat the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, and they win the WWF Tag Team Championship in about 12 minutes. The Godwins with that gimmick in late 97 winning the tag titles. I don't know, to me, almost is like, I guess it's a mid-card title. Or like, I guess they don't care about the tag titles. I know Vince is not a big tag team guy anyway. It just felt like it wasn't that big of a deal to me, like the tag team titles at this point. Godwins in late 97, I don't know if it fit anymore.
The Godwin gimmick sucked. I mean, I never liked the Godwin gimmick. I inherited the Godwin gimmick, but I could tell you this. Those two guys were the real deal, especially Mark Canterbury. Also, bro, you got to understand, they were very, very tight with Taker. And Taker had a lot of pull. And a lot of his buddies got a lot of favor. And I'm sure that had a lot to do with putting the belts on these guys.
They really cement themselves as heels, and they beat up the Headbangers after the match, even after they win the tag titles. But to me, I don't know about that gimmick. You know what I mean?
I'm with you. I agree with you 100%, John. I would have never put that gimmick on them, no.
Now, the next thing they do is very, I don't know, this doesn't really seem WWF-like. It seems more WCW-like. They do a little bit of a legend ceremony. It was basically for St. Louis Wrestling and the Legends of St. Louis. Jim Ross and Sonny were hosting. They honored Gene Kaniski, Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., Harley Race, Terry Funk, Lou Thesz, and, of course, the legendary promoter, Sam Mushnick. Any sort of reason behind this? Because it seems like Vince did this once in a great while, but not often.
I'm not sure where this idea came from, but I mean, I could tell you, bro, St. Louis is really a rich, rich, rich wrestling town. You knew it when you were there. You felt it, bro. The fans were just so much smarter. I mean, really, there was a difference when we did a show in St. Louis. I don't know what triggered them in doing this, bro. I remember this, but I honestly don't remember the reasoning behind it. Bro, I don't know. Maybe they had to eat time. I don't know, bro, why they decided to do this.
It doesn't seem very Attitude Era-esque. It doesn't seem very WWF style. Yeah. Like WCW used to do it, you know, Slamboree, Night of the Legends, and Legends Reunion, and they bring guys out and they put them in the Hall of Fame and different stuff, but it's not like a Vince thing. And now with the Hall of Fame, yes, but it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like Vince, especially guys like Kaniski, who obviously never wrestled there, and Thez, and the Funks, which he never really did anything, and Harley Race was, you know, obviously past his prime, but I mean, they didn't really do much with him, so it's very interesting that they went about it for that. So then we have next up a match for the vacant WWF Intercontinental Championship, of course, because of Stone Cold's injury. They had a little bit of a mini tournament, and the finals were Owen Hart and Farouk. Farouk loses to Owen Hart in about 7 minutes, 15 seconds. Owen Hart becomes the new WWF Intercontinental Champion. Austin is there. Like, he physically gets involved. He's the guest timekeeper, the guest commentator, and he kind of helps Owen win a little bit because he hits Farouk. So he could physically get involved, but he can't wrestle.
That's what it's all about. The way Owen laid out Austin unintentionally did not make Steve look good, and I'm sure he didn't feel good about it. So now we're going to put steam on Owen. We're going to give Owen the belt so Austin can come back and get his revenge.
Austin is working his way back slowly but surely from the serious, or what he thought was a serious neck injury.
I could tell you, as a shoot, bro, he was scared to death when that happened. There was a time, bro, where he thought he was paralyzed, and it scared the living shit out of him, bro. And he never, ever forgave Owen. And bro, it's funny because some of the things I've read and stuff, like, he's hinted about Owen doing it intentionally. That would be the very last guy on the roster that I would ever think would hurt you. Like, I love Steve. I mean, I'm Steve's biggest fan. However, when he has hinted about that, bro, you never in a million years would get me to believe that. Not freaking Owen.
Well, a lot of people don't remember this. About 5 years earlier, Austin kind of did the same thing to legendary Japanese wrestler Masahiro Chono when they were working in Japan, but he kind of did almost the same similar thing, and Chono ended up getting a stinger. So it's almost like, wow, did Austin forget that that happened? You know what I mean? Like, that accidents can happen, and almost in the eerily similar pal driver way.
I didn't even know that, John. That's weird.
Then Brett always said, you got to be more like apologetic. Like, I know it was an accident, but you know what I mean? Not kiss his ass, but you got to apologize. And I guess Owen just thought it was an accident.
To Owen's defense, bro, listen, man, we are all human beings. And in some situations, you just don't know how to act or what to say. Sometimes you just don't know exactly what to say, so you don't say anything. So the whole thing was really, really kabuki-ish, man.
So now they add another match in to fill in the time.
More minis?
No, you're going to love this one. The Disciples of Apocalypse, 8-Ball Chains, Crush, and Skull defeat Los Periquas, Jose, Jesus, Miguel, and Savio Vega in an 8-man tag. Went about 9 minutes. DOA gets the win. Crush pins Jesus.
They just needed to eat up some time. They always loved the Periquas. You know, those guys were great workers, and that's why they were there. And then you had DOA, who were just physically so impressive.
So then we have the semi-main event, Bret Hart and British Bulldog of the Hart Foundation taking on Vader and the Patriot in a flag match. You got to capture the flag, basically, Canada, USA, that thing. Do you like this? Is this in 97? It just seems like 1987, like Hogan and Nikolai Volkoff.
Yeah, I'm with you, bro. The flag match is so freaking campy. Just looking for some kind of a gimmick to make the match a little bit different. Obviously, you got the cage match to follow, so it can't be like a street fight or something violent like that.
The only little tweak that they made, you capture flag after you win, so you have to win by pinfall or submission. Then you do the flag. So it's a little bit better, but still terrible.
I agree with you 100%.
So Bret Hart and British Bulldog defeat the Patriot and Vader. Bret Hart rolls up the Patriot for the victory. Just a roll-up. Not like a strong victory for Bret.
He's got to win, and that's the least impressive way that he can win.
Funny thing is, fans try to interfere and like climb into the ring and grab the flag. Like, do you remember that at all? Security had to get these two fans. Yeah. They were like trying to, I don't know if they just hated Bret in Canada that much or if they were drunk or what, but there was fans that were trying to interfere in the match.
I don't remember that.
The match was pretty good, but that might have been like the most memorable part. Like, who the hell are these guys? Like, what the hell is going on here? Like, these fans are trying to get grab the flag. What are they doing?
That's crazy, man.
Bret had a lot of heat at that point, though. He really did.
Yeah, he did.
I feel like he was maybe the best promo that you guys had in that time. He was just spitballing.
People say Bret was a bad promo, and I'm like, bro, go back and watch that heel USA stuff. Are you freaking kidding me, bro? None of that stuff was scripted, man. He was all, like you said, spitballing that stuff. Man, he was cutting great promos.
I know you helped Michaels a lot with his promos. Did you help Bret at all with his or no?
There was a difference with promos. Guys that really relied on their work tended to want more help with their promos so they could really concentrate on the match more. Bret was more of, these are the things you need to hit. These are the things you need to get over. And bro, like, I would write a promo because I just need that for my sake in laying out the whole show to know what Bret's going to say and whatnot. And I would write a promo and then I would give it to him. But Bret would take that and 100% put it in his own words.
Bullet points.
Yeah.
Man, he was awesome at that point. It's just funny. It's like Vince couldn't afford to pay him, but he was doing some of the best work of his career at that point.
I agree, man. I agree with you, John. Yep. Vince knows Bret ain't going to be around. And, bro, that's the thing, too, you got to understand. Vince is really, when it comes to honor, man-to-man, his word type of thing, that means a lot to Vince. So the fact that he's going to have to renege on the deal, there's no other way to put it. He can't afford him, bro. He paid him a lot of money to keep him and 1,000% expects Bret to walk. So, yes, that's what we are seeing here.
A few weeks after this, he's openly going to let him negotiate with WCW, which means, hey, get your money. I can't pay you, but they can. You know, get your money, pal. Which is kind of embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like, I can't pay you, but Bischoff.
Yeah, especially for a guy like him, bro. Forget about it.
So the main event is up next. Shawn Michaels defeating The Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell. This was to determine the number one contender for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship at Survivor Series the following month. And we know where that's headed. But here, Michaels defeats Undertaker. DX is with him. Rick Rude, China, Triple H. There's a spot where they're able to get outside the ring because they destroy a cameraman. They beat the hell out of him. So then they end up going to the top of the cage. Michaels gets thrown off through the table. Great, great match. It just one of those things where Michaels and Taker, whenever they wanted to, they could just put on an absolute classic. Your buddy Dave Meltzer gave it 5 stars. So just an unbelievable match. But of course, I think the most memorable part of the match, besides it being awesome, is the debut of Kane. He comes out. Vince says, oh my God, it's gotta be Kane. He goes nuts, really puts it over. Paul Bearer is kind of leading the way. Kane rips off the door. Undertaker is shocked. Who is this guy? It's his brother. Kane beats the shit out of him. He lets Michaels pin him and he walks out. Michaels is now the number one contender. The Hell in a Cell, which is a new thing for you guys. Michaels gets the idea from Buzz Sawyer and Tommy Rich, except for they do it times 1,000. Like, he gives them this small idea, and he said he came back and they turned it into this gigantic, awesome cage. But what do you make of this whole thing?
It was me, Vince, and Cornette at the time booking. I remember. And I go to Vince's house.
I remember sitting in Vince McMahon's dining room. That's where we wrote creative. Originally, it was a cage match between Taker and Shawn Michaels. But of course, both of these guys were in the prime of their careers. And we wanted to have some kind of a match where they would be able to do more. Keep in mind, the cage came down on the ring. So you had to stay within that cage. So the participants were very limited to what they could do. So the idea was we wanted to put them in a cage, but we wanted to give them room outside the ring, especially Shawn Michaels in this match, outside of the ring so they could do more.
Because Shawn and Taker don't want to be limited to just the ring. They want to be able to fight outside of the ring, but still be in a cage.
So the idea of the name Hell in the Cell, that originated from me. And as I said, I was more of the creative guy. And listen, this ain't rocket science. The first thing I do when we need to come up with a name or a character or this and that, one of the easiest things to do is to rhyme. You know, what rhymes with what? It's so elementary and it's so easy. So what I was thinking of is Taker, Shawn, being locked inside a cell, like a jail cell. Well, Hell in the Cell. Really, really simple. So I know I pitched the name for it. Boom, we were all set for the Hell in the Cell match.
I do want to say one thing, bro, because I want to clarify this, because this really pisses me off. This is the Mandela effect, bro. You know the Mandela effect?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
Okay. I want to make one thing perfectly clear, and I'm not saying this to take credit. It pisses me off because there's a reason for it. I gave Vince the name the Hell in the Cell, okay? The Hell in the Cell. Because, bro, the whole idea of it is the cell is a character. That was my thought. And when you go back and you watch Raw and the build to this, it's Hell in the Cell. I don't know how this became Hell in a Cell over the years, because Hell in a Cell is a whole different meaning than Hell in the Cell. The cell means there is only one cell.
That night, it could have been one and done with Hell in the Cell, depending on the match. It was a new concept. It was the first time we were using the cell. And let's face it, it could have bombed. But going in, we were very, very confident. You had two of the best in the business in that cell. So my point is, those guys, go back and watch the match. It is an unbelievable match. They tore the house down. They had no regard for their bodies. They gave it all up in that cell in an effort to get the concept over. Here we are, and the Hell in the Cell is still being used. That's a testament to the greatness of both The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. The fact that they were in that very first match, they were going to either make the cage or we were never going to see it again. But solely on their performance, it became a staple in the WWE. So all the credit in the world goes to The Undertaker and goes to Shawn Michaels, and made it an iconic structure. And you can't take that away from them.
See, now, here's where you're going to get some of the wrestling purists disagreeing with me. Because here's what they're going to tell you. These two guys tore the house down. And then their work is overshadowed by Kane. And that's what they're going to tell you. But I will tell you this, bro. Yes, they had a hell of a match. Nobody was going to forget that match. And there wouldn't have been a better way to introduce this character. That was tailor-made to get all this business done. There are so many times on Raw, bro, where something that is supposed to be important happens And 2 seconds later, the announcers have totally forgotten about it. It happens like every single week. And back then, man, so many of the calls just stand out in my mind. That was such a big part of the show. So, yeah, man, all those things coming together was really, really, really memorable.
To me, awesome match. But the ending of the match is awesome because it's so character driven. Like, holy shit, who is this guy? Oh my God, he's a monster. Legit main eventer, boom. Just by Undertaker's reaction, beating up Undertaker, Michaels winning because of him, Vince's reaction on commentary, and Paul Bearer being with him. Everything's like, okay, got another main eventer now. A lot of people say Kane is the greatest character debut in history. Do you agree?
Yeah, that was a great debut, bro. I mean, that was really, 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 really good. I do remember it. I've gone back and watched that.
And this was the debut of Kane. The music, here he comes in the arena. Vince McMahon going nuts, ripping that door off of the cage. Quite frankly, arguably, that may have been the greatest intro to any character in the history of the wrestling business. I think you'd really have to go back and look if any other character on their first night had any more impact than Kane did. Paul Bearer was the one responsible for laying this beautiful story that Bruce Pritchard had crafted, laying this out and building the anticipation and building the anticipation. So he got Kane over before Kane even got there. So then when Glenn/Kane made that debut, it's what everybody wanted and more. But, you know, it was also a little bit more important than that. When you watch the Raws that follow, we booked Kane and we wrote Kane like an absolute monster. I mean, he would go on to kill everybody off the bat. Just another thing I think the business is lacking today. There's a lot of inconsistency. So they're not consistently getting a character over. A character maybe takes 2 steps forward, 1 step back, a step forward, a step back. With Kane, it was total destruction from the beginning. And everybody was, holy crap, The Undertaker has met his match.
But that's the thing, man. It's like, this is what doesn't happen anymore. Like, bro, when I knew we were introducing a new character, when I knew a wrestler was coming back from injury, bro, you're usually given like a timetable. Like if Austin's out and I know he's going to be out in 2 weeks, what I'm going to do over that time, bro, is I'm going to set the table for Austin. I'm going to create circumstances, bro, so when he returns, when Kane arrives, the place is going to become unglued. They don't do that anymore, bro. So setting the table for a character like Kane, bro, is just so freaking important.
Things are being built up in the proper manner right here.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, 100%.
Thumbs up on the pay-per-view, thumbs down in the middle.
Oh, definitely thumbs up. This is a iconic. Bro, I always say this with any television show or any pay-per-view, they're going to remember the last thing they see. So, yeah, bro, this ending was really iconic.
All right, so let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Vince, what do you got?
Yeah, everything is russosbrand.com. Just check it out. You'll get all my podcasts. It'll send you in all the different directions, but that's the place to go.
Vince, you better not be mailing it in, all right? Don't mail it in, okay?
Please, bro. That's the one thing that pisses me off so much, bro, because you could say a lot of things about me, but the hours I spend podcasting, bro, like, really, man.
True. All right. On that note, thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll see you right back here next time for the next podcast. See you then, folks.
Oh my God. Wait a minute. It's Paul Bearer. It's Paul Bearer. And that's
be Kane! That's gotta be Kane!
Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.